Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Deborah Becker. In 1963, the U.S. Supreme Court declared that school-sponsored Bible reading was unconstitutional, but the landmark ruling included a strong statement from Justice Tom Clark about the importance of religious education.
Justice Clark wrote, "An education is not complete without a study of comparative religion or the history of religion and its relationship to the advancement of civilization." But more than a half a century later, religious education in America is fraught with controversy.
Linda K. Wertheimer, a longtime education writer who lives in Lexington, writes about this in her new book on the challenges of teaching about religion and religious diversity in modern-day America. Among other things, she describes episodes of anti-Semitic intolerance in suburban Boston and anti-Muslim hysteria in Texas.
She argues that if we want to educate our children about the world they're growing up in, we need to teach them about religion, and too often that's not happening. Linda K. Wertheimer is the former education editor of the Boston Globe. Her new book is called Faith Ed, Teaching About Religion in an Age of Intolerance, and she's with us now. Welcome to Radio Boston. It's good to meet you, Linda.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
And listeners, we want to invite you into this conversation. How should schools teach religion? Should they? Does yours do a good job? Do you agree that we'd be better off if our kids had a better understanding about world religions and religious diversity? Do you worry about blurring the line between educating and indoctrinating? Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We're also on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. Linda, there's so many interesting stories in this book, and you describe early in the book, a controversy that erupted in Wellesley Middle School, and it's this kind of episode that highlights the perils of teaching religion in an age of intolerance, as you describe. So, it begins with a visit by high school kids, middle school kids, from Wellesley to a Roxbury Mosque, right?
Correct.
So, what happened?
So, Wellesley had taken these kind of field trips for many years. This was their first time to the mosque in Roxbury. And just to give you a little bit of background, there's a backdrop to this, because the Roxbury Mosque had been controversial to a particular group in Boston called Americans for Peace and Tolerance. And there was a parent at Wellesley Middle School who happened to be associated with that group, and she was sent in with a video camera. They didn't particularly like this mosque. They felt that some of the backers had had connections to terrorism, an accusation that the mosque refuted. So in comes Wellesley Middle School with about 200 kids. And during the field trip, a male worshiper invited five boys to come up and pray. Or really what he said was, "Would you like to stand with us in the line of worshipers?" And the boys said, "Yeah, those would be kind of cool." And five boys went up and they stood with him. And the parent caught them on video mimicking what the worshipers were doing. And that was in the spring of 2010. In September 2010, the group put out a video that said, "Wellesley students learn to pray to Allah."
Oh, boy.
And the thing blew up in the school district's faces.
Yeah. And so give us a sense of the fallout. What happened in sort of the wake of that controversy?
Sure. So first of all, the superintendent actually came out and issued an apology. And she said, "On these field trips, it's never meant for the students to participate in any sort of ritual act. Mm-hmm. They're there to observe. So we apologize for that." Secondly, parents, interestingly, came out in great force to support the school system and said, "We love this course. It is terrific." But then there was a third aspect of this, and they got skewered on Fox. They got skewered by the group who had sent in the parents. They got some death threats. You know, they said, "How dare you take these kids into the lion den?" A commentator wrote on a particular article, "And you're trying to convert these kids to Islam." It was an accusation of indoctrination.
Right. So I want to ask you about another episode, because your book goes through a few of these episodes. And just to give a flavor of what we're talking about, tell another story about an effort to educate kids about Islam that resulted in big controversy. This involved a teacher in Lumberton, Texas, who invited her students to try on burqas as a way to understand the way women in the Muslim world, many women in the Muslim world, dress. right? And this erupted into a huge controversy.
Yes, and that didn't happen that long ago. That happened in, I believe, 2013.
Yeah.
And this teacher was not a trained world geography teacher initially. She had taught home economics, and then later she taught world geography. For 15 years, she had brought in clothes from around the world for the kids to try on. And in this particular instance, she brought in several items of clothing from the Middle East. And it included a burqa, included a chador, included the kind of garb that Saudi Arabian men might wear. And five kids tried them on. One of the girls took a picture, put it on Facebook. It shows one of the girls in the blue burqa from Afghanistan. And that got picked up, somehow went viral. Groups like Prepare to Take Back America jumped on it. And once again, you're hearing these accusations of, oh, my gosh, you know, they're trying to convert these kids to Islam. And people came to a school board meeting and complained. The teacher, the school district ultimately kind of stood by the teacher, but there was another layer to this. They also said, but we also believe strongly in Christian values. So this kind of shows that these things have different layers depending on where it happens in the country.
Right. And in the end, this teacher felt compelled or was forced to resign, right?
She was not forced to resign. She was in her early 60s, and she had been thinking about retiring.
I see.
And because of all the flack she got, not so much from within the school district, but from outside of it, she said, I've had enough. And so she retired at the end of that school year.
I guess one of the lessons, and you make this point, that teachers take away from these kinds of episodes is that they've got to play it safe, right? I mean, this is really kind of touchy stuff. And if you push a little too hard trying to get people to understand what's going on in this great, diverse world of religious experiences, you take a big risk.
Yes, they become gun-shy.
Yeah.
I saw that in Wellesley. I saw that in Tampa, Florida. I saw that in Wichita, Kansas. And, you know, and I obviously saw it in Lumberton, Texas. In Wellesley, I went back in 2013 and traveled with them on a field trip to Temple Beth Elohim in Wellesley. And kind of to my surprise, you know, the junior rabbi was handing out yarmulkes for the kids to try on and or to put on as they walk into a sanctuary, which is somewhat of a common thing in some temples that you would do that. And so the kids took them, and the teachers were watching. And I happened to be sitting next to the teachers, and I heard an audible gasp. And I said, well, what's the problem? And they said, well, a little uncomfortable with the kids putting these on. We don't want them ever to feel compelled to put on a ritual item of any other religion. So the teacher went up to the rabbi, said, nah, let's not have them do this if they're not Jewish. And then the teacher actually took the microphone from the rabbi and said, if you're not Jewish, please take off the yarmulkes.
I see.
And that was sort of a different, I think pre the controversy, I don't think they would have even thought about it.
Mm. So what's the takeaway here for you? I mean, how do you teach religion in a way that avoids this kind of controversy?
So I have an example in the book of Modesto School System in California.
Right.
And they require every high school student to take a world religion course before graduation. And they've never had any controversy. So you could go their way, which is no field trips, no guest speakers, no trying on of items, no intense discussion. And I see it as something in between.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think you're taking away, for the middle schoolers in particular, this idea of going on a field trip is really important. You know, I heard sort of testimonials about how this changed a lot of them. So I think you can go on field trips. You have to make sure, and Wellesley does do this now better than ever before, you have to make sure that the person leading the field trip understands the First Amendment inside and out and where the line is between preaching and teaching. And the teachers have to be ready to jump right in if there's something that they don't think is correct. And you also have to prepare the students to understand that just because you're seeing this temple, it doesn't represent all temples. They're not all the same, and same about the mosque. So I think you can do it. I think the more teacher training, the better it is. So I think probably the ideal scenario is somewhere between Wellesley and Modesto.
And, you know, here's, you know, a really sort of, I mean, this gets down to a very, very basic question that's sort of behind the inspiration of your book. Why? Why teach religion in schools at all? Why is it important?
So there's two main reasons. I mean, one for me is kind of a personal reason. It's about reducing bullying of people who are not Christian, because the fact is most people who are getting bullied about religion actually can be the very religious Christian, but most of them are the religious minorities. And I heard story after story of kids getting bullied because they were Sikh or Muslim or Jewish or Hindu or atheist as well. So one is that. The other one is obviously to reduce ignorance. And it's just we need to become a more religiously literate society.
And what do we know about how literate we are, religiously speaking?
So courtesy of Pew, we know quite a bit. and they gave a quiz. And Americans basically got half of the questions right and then, of course, the other half wrong. And they were bombing things like, you know, the name of the Holy Book of Islam or the name of the four Gospels or what faith the Dalai Lama was or when the Jewish Sabbath begins. And so I think there are a lot of things that a very literate person would consider sort of basic.
Right. Listeners, we're talking to Linda K. Wertheimer. She's written a book called Faith Ed, Teaching About Religion in an Age of Intolerance. Let us know what you think. How should schools teach religion? Does yours do a good job? What's the key to that? And why is it important? Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Linda, we have a lot of callers who want to get in on this conversation, so let's go to
Terrific.
A few of them. Deb is calling from Bedford, a town we were just talking about. Deb, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm Deb from Bedford, and I'm a brought-up Catholic Unitarian Universalist living in Bedford for 23 years. The community experienced some events, but they weren't typical of the community. We have a very diverse community, having a large minority profile that is in our community for a host of reasons that gives us a rich depth. So when these events happened, a lot of us were quite unawares that this had been happening for a longer time than we knew, because the school did try to deal with it internally. We have a very rich social studies history curriculum that we win awards in the history fair competition that tries to put out the religious issues that are interwoven into our community and our history.
Deb, I'm going to jump in because you've made reference to these events that happened in Bedford. And of course, I said we were talking about it, but I was confused. I had been reading about it earlier today. Linda K. Wertheimer, talk about what happened in Bedford, because we're talking about a fairly recent case of a pretty alarming anti-Semitic episode.
Yes. And I'll also add that I wrote a Globe magazine cover story on Bedford, Deb. And so I know a lot about what you're talking about, having spent a long time with the officials and people of Bedford on that story. So what happened in Bedford was there were swastikas that appeared on the playground in an elementary school. There were swastikas that appeared in the high school bathroom. But in a way, even more disturbing were some of the things that kids were saying to each other. Or they heard about a pair of first graders playing a game called Jail the Jews. Mm-hmm. There were kids saying things like, well, you're Jewish, you know, so you killed Jesus, you know, kind of some things you were surprised to hear. And then as I dug further in talking to students, they said, well, you know, we've actually experienced things before this. And in middle school, kids were throwing pennies at Jewish kids and making remarks that way. So that's a little bit of the backdrop. I'm happy to talk about things
sure,
I know the school district did if you want. But,
well, let's because our
yeah.
caller was making reference to yeah. to a pretty good response,
yes.
a social studies curriculum that seemed
yes.
to be very forward-looking. How did the community respond?
So that was why I wrote the magazine piece for the Globe, because the ADL actually said Bedford is sort of this shining gold standard of how to respond to hate in our midst.
This is the Anti-Defamation League.
The Anti-Defamation League of New England. And what Bedford did is came together in multiple ways. You had a police chief and a rabbi pairing up together. And they gave a talk about baking challah, and that was to a whole group of people from four different churches. You had in the school system, they re-examined their entire curriculum from K to 12 to look at how they could better deal with issues of both diversity and religion. It wasn't just about religion. And they felt like they had not been doing enough before. They brought in Facing History in Ourselves, which is based in the Brookline area, and looked at how they could do that in the middle school, because that deals more head on with things like the Holocaust and genocide, discrimination, and that kind of thing.
Right. All right. Let's go to Chris, who's calling from Plymouth. Chris, you're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I'm a seventh grade social studies teacher, and this year we are tasked with a more intensive look at religion. And I'm just wondering what age you think is appropriate for this topic.
This is a great question, and it's one that I wanted to ask you too, Linda. Thank you, Chris, for that question.
Yeah, Chris, I absolutely love this question because I have very strong views on this. When I went into this, I didn't know how young you could actually go. And then I heard about the core knowledge curriculum, and it starts in first grade.
First grade.
And I happened to also be the mother of, well, at the time, I was the mother of a kindergartner. He's now in second grade. So I knew that age very, very well. I was like, oh, interesting. And I spent a week there in Wichita, and I watched as this first grade teacher taught these kids about Judaism, Christianity, and Islam in a very simplistic way, but understandable way, like showing a PowerPoint and like, here's a church, here's a mosque, here's a temple, and here are the symbols that represent those religions. And the kids colored those symbols. They cut them out. They learned about them in different ways. They had stories read to them. They read stories. So that's sort of a long way of answering your question. But I believe that you can start teaching about the world's religions to kids as early as first grade, and in some ways, even in kindergarten, by just reading them storybooks about different religions.
Mm. What about the current, I mean, let's talk about the current sort of post 9/11 climate, because it might be one thing to teach a young kid about, I don't know, Hindu traditions. But when you start talking about the Muslim world, there's so much misunderstanding and obviously so much misunderstanding and pent up anger and energy and misinformation and so on and so forth. So how do we balance that?
So great question. And I think some teachers are struggling, but a lot of the ones who've been doing it for a while feel like they figured it out. And they're sticking to the facts that people mainly agree on. So like, these are the five pillars of Islam, you know, like the basic practices. Muhammad is their, you know, was their leader. These are the holidays that Muslims practice. When you get to the high school level, I think they get a little more sophisticated. I haven't found a single like middle or high school teacher who's afraid to talk about the fact that, yes, there have been terrorist acts in our country, and yes, those terrorists were Muslim, and they will talk about it. But what the point they try to make is, yes, while that is happening, you still can't stereotype and say all Muslims are terrorists.
Sure. But so, where you wrote about this.
Yes,
I'm just
I did.
Trying to remember the detail of which school where actually did something fairly innocuous and put something up on a notice board that that simply said, you know, here are the five pillars of Islam. And it was considered sacrilege and controversial and caused all kinds of problems.
Well, the very same school where I went and saw this lovely first grade lesson, they had put up a bulletin board for the fourth graders, and it said, all it said was, I believe, the five pillars of Islam. That's it. And it was a blank bulletin board. It was for the fourth graders who were going to do projects about that later, just as part of their lessons about the spread of Islam. That curriculum builds as they go. And a parent of a child in the school took a picture of it and sent it to a lawmaker who belonged to the same messianic Jewish temple she belonged to. This gets a little complicated.
Yeah.
And he flipped out and said, well, you know, you can't teach about the five pillars. You have to teach about the sixth pillar, and that sixth pillar is jihad, and they all want to kill us. And so there you're getting into what a number of people would consider Islamophobia.
Yep.
And I will be the first one to say, well, I'm not an expert on terrorism, but I think the mainstream Muslims would agree that, you know, there's these five pillars of Islam. And yes, there is something called jihad, and that is interpreted in different ways. But we were teaching about the five pillars of Islam, like sort of the five basic core beliefs that includes going to Mecca for the pilgrimage. So that was that. It was a bulletin board.
Yeah. All right. Quite a story, though. I mean, again, it just points to the point you're making about the challenge of teaching about religion in an age of intolerance. Let's go to Chris, who's calling from Revere. Chris, you're on the air. Good to have you.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just want to say I grew up in Wellesley and many years ago, and we had a wonderful pastor at our church, which was the Wellesley Hills Congregational Church, who on youth fellowship Sundays used to take us to different religious institutions. We went to a Muslim temple. We went to a Jewish service. We went to Buddhist services. We went to Catholic services, just to learn about the diversity of religion. And this served me so well that when I got to college, I minored in philosophy and took courses in comparative religion, which
Chris, it sounds like such an important experience in your life. I'd love to get Linda Wertheimer to respond to this. This sounds like the kind of sort of ideal educational idea that you'd like to see.
Yeah, I mean, I think we need to expose our children to different religions. I mean, I think it's very important. It's part of learning to live in a pluralistic society. It's part of, you know, we're learning about the world we're living in. We're learning about the world beyond us. Mm-hmm. In terms of taking tours of houses of worship, it's a slippery slope, as Wellesley discovered. But I don't think school districts should avoid it altogether. I think they have to venture carefully when they do it. I think it's great when houses of worship take that on. But, you know, one important thing to remember is that the fastest growing group in America are the people who affiliate with no religion. So this instruction probably won't happen in the houses of worship for most people. They're either going to get it in their public schools or they probably won't get it. I mean, I wished I had taken a course on comparative religions in college, but didn't.
Linda, I'd love to sort of get a little bit about your background, because one of the things that, if I sort of read correctly, that inspired you to write this book is you talk about moving to Ohio as a young girl, where your family was pretty much the only Jewish family in town, right? So how did that experience inform your view on all this?
In a way, I feel like I've been writing this book since that happened. That in a way, the impetus for this book started when I was 9 years old, and we moved from Western New York State, where at least there were a couple temples, to Findlay, Ohio, where there were none, and went to this tiny school system called Van Buren, where they really had never seen a Jew, as far as I know. And the first week, I'm in my fourth grade classroom, my brother's in his sixth grade classroom, and in walks this lady hired by the local churches, and she has us sing, Jesus Loves Me. And then she teaches us stories about Jesus and all the miracles he did. And I'm this Jewish kid sinking as low as I can into the floor because I'm kind of embarrassed, and it's very, very uncomfortable. I go home, I get excused.
Get excused from the class.
I get excused from the class.
I see. So now you're singled out as the one. That must have been incredibly difficult for a 9-year-old.
Yeah. No, I mean, it stuck with me for 40 years. You know, it still sticks with me. And the kids are smart. They picked up on it. And they, you know, they would ask me questions like, well, why don't you go? And I'd say, well, I'm Jewish. I'm like, well, what's that? Do you believe in Jesus? I'm like, well, no. And then they'd be like, well, you're going to go to hell. And, you know, and I mentioned the book too, Our House Was Swastika'd, when I was, I think, my freshman year of high school. So I never felt comfortable there.
Yeah.
Though I made some friends, but I never felt comfortable. And I always wondered, was this anti-Semitism or was it ignorance?
Yeah. And the answer to that?
The answer is complicated, but I would say overall, I think it's more ignorance.
Right, which brings us back to the need for education.
Which is, yes. You know. And there is a chapter in my book called The Church Lady, and I talk about that, and I actually go back to Ohio, and I found the women.
Interesting. So it seems like that teaching religion and how you teach it, it's a bit of a free-for-all, and I think you make this point in the book. Some schools are doing it seriously, some not at all. Do we need some sort of consensus around this?
I would love to see a consensus. And as you may know, in this country, we've always kind of steered clear of any sort of national mandate for what we do in education. The closest we've come to consensus is like the national social studies organizations and national geography associations would say, here's what we should do. And the states have set standards saying we should teach about the world's religions as part of history and geography, but they don't say how much you should teach. So I think it would be great if there was more of a consensus about how much time we should devote to this and at least which religions we should cover at a bare minimum. If you look at some of the standards, you'll usually see Judaism, Christianity, Islam mentioned, and California Sikhism has been added to the mix. But yes, I would love to see more of a dialogue on this all around the country and at the national level.
Well, Linda K. Wertheimer is the former education editor of the Boston Globe. Her new book is called Faith Ed, Teaching About Religion in an Age of Intolerance. Listeners, we had a lot of callers who didn't make it onto the show. Go to radioboston.org, leave your comment there. And Linda, thank you so much for coming in. Fascinating book and great conversation. Really appreciated having you.
Thank you.
And listeners, stay with us. Coming up, author Ann Beattie with stories from and about the state of Maine and the state of mind in Maine. I'm Anthony Brooks with Deborah Becker. This is Radio Boston.